I would say definitely contact your librarian, because sometimes the question is, it can be specific enough that it's maybe a little more efficient to just ask the subject librarian as opposed to kind of floundering around on the web page.
You're listening to What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary, here to deconstruct complex computer science topics bit by bit and explain what the tech is going on. In this episode, Kelsey and I talked to Jennifer Lee, the Associate Librarian for the Computer Science Department at the University of Calgary. We had a great in-depth conversation about what she does for computer science students at the university, as well as some resources available to all students.
Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show. We're really excited to have you. I guess we'll start just by saying, how was your day? What did you get up to today?
Oh, today was actually unusually busy. I had quite a few meetings. I'm looking at my calendar here. This morning I had chat reference for a couple hours, so I answered any questions through chat. I met with some instructors with respect to a library session I'm doing for them next week. And I had a meeting for a research project that I'm taking part in, and it's a scoping review. So we've done a whole bunch of searching in databases, gathered up all the articles, sifted through them, and now we're at the point where we can actually read the articles and decide if the information is, or what we're going to do with the information in those articles. So yeah, had a lot of planning today.
Oh, that's really neat. So Leanne told us a little bit about your role. We understand that you're the subject librarian for computer science and a few other science programs. So kind of what does your job entail, and what are some of the things you do on a regular basis?
So right now I am the subject or liaison librarian for chemistry, computer science, math stats, physics astronomy, interim geography, and interim bachelor of health sciences. So in that role, I support students and faculty in those subject areas. And that includes things like some of the teaching, like going in to do library sessions or doing them on Zoom right now. Collections, so ordering, selecting books in those subject areas to make sure that the library collections are up to date. Communications between those departments and those areas about things that are happening with the library. And then kind of as a faculty member, there's the research and service component. So kind of research on my own or with other staff members. And then service is like different committees and things like that around campus and especially within the library and libraries and cultural resources. That's kind of it in a nutshell, but there's like a lot of little like moving parts and things to know about the library and how the library sits within the university that make it really interesting. Every day is different.
Yeah, it sounds like your role encompasses quite a lot, and you seem like you're very busy. So yeah, that's very interesting. Not related to what we were just talking about, but kind of something else. So I was wondering what sort of tech or resources that you may use at the library, and what would a computer science student perhaps come to you to ask for help with, or those sorts of things, I guess, yeah.
Okay. Well, the library actually is pretty full of tech. So we've got, of course, like the computers. We have a lot of electronic access to books and journal articles. It's kind of an invisible tech. A lot of that happens behind the scenes. So we have a lot of staff members who are like making sure that the links from our library site make it out to the publisher site so that everything is relatively seamless for people who are using it. Making sure that when we like select a book for the collection, if it's electronic, that it makes it into the catalog so that people can see it. So there's a lot of that kind of invisible tech, I guess. But we also have things like a makerspace, which I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's on the third floor of the library.
Hey, I just want to jump in here. Jennifer is talking about the Taylor Family Digital Library, so TFDL.
which I know you can't go into to see right now, but it's still actually accepting 3D printouts. So you can submit that electronically. We're doing a lot of course, e-reference on top of chat, so emails and things like that. For computer scientists, besides the like books and journals that you would use, we do have, and some of this is of course predicated on if we ever get back, right, to physical, there is like a Viz Studio, VR Studio and area that's also in LabNext. The other thing that might be of interest to you guys is our visualization person has kind of like meetups for visualization. So if you're interested in that, he holds them every once in a while, and those are actually listed on our homepage under workshops. So he'll list them there, and then you can sign up for those. But in general, like if a student contacts me, they're often looking for resources for their courses, or they're looking for background information. So I'll show them how to find books and how to find articles and things like that.
Do you work mainly with graduate students or undergraduate as well, PhD? Kind of, yeah, what's the main demographic, I guess, that you work with?
All students and faculty, so and staff, if they contact me, I'll try and help them or figure out. Sometimes it's not my area, but I can figure out, okay, who in the library would be the best person to refer them to. It's such a huge place that sometimes it's difficult to know who's the best person to contact. But if they have my contact information, I'll try and figure out the best person for them.
Yeah, so I was just going to jump in there and maybe take a step back here. So I did a little bit of research, and so you went to McGill for a Bachelor of Science in Psychology, correct?
Physiology.
Physiology, that's my apologies.
No worries.
But how did you, you know, bridge that gap between physiology and, you know, working in computer science as a librarian?
Oh, that is a good question. So yeah, a lot of obviously the subject area of physiology is not applicable to computer science. But when I've been given a new subject area, some of the things I'll do is look at researchers' homepages, look at the departmental pages. If I have any notes from the previous librarian, like meet with them to like if there's any knowledge transfer, make sure I like grill them for all that sort of information. Look at sometimes there's lists of books in certain areas. So like, you know, must have books in computer science or something like that. So I'll review those for collection content development and then go through the databases. So look at what the main databases are for computer science or for whatever subject, make sure I know how to use them. What are the quirks? It's just trying to apply the general principles of librarianship to the subject area. I mean, that being said, there's a lot of quirks in different subjects that, you know, I probably don't know because I have like so many of them kind of running around in my brain, but definitely try and hit the highlights.
And were you interested in computer science or any of the other subject areas that you are the subject librarian for besides physiology? Were you interested in those in your university career at all? Or was this something new that you took up after you graduated?
So when I was going through my undergrad, I was pretty sure, I kind of wanted to go into medicine. And then as I kept going on and on, I realized I'm just not very competitive, like a competitive person in terms of like marks and like I just have to be at the top or anything like that. And I was walking by the library school at McGill and I said, oh, I didn't realize, like it was on this side of me to my left. I didn't realize that librarianship was like it required any extra certification, any extra education, but here's this whole faculty of librarianship. So I kind of tucked that in the back of my head. And then when I graduated, I talked to a couple of other librarians at the University of Toronto. And one of them was a health sciences librarian. And so I was like, oh, well, you know, I've always liked the like researchy part of my degree. So I always liked going to the health sciences library and doing the research on Medline, the main database for health sciences, and actually like getting all those articles. I hated the writing part. So she sold me on health librarianship. And so I applied to U of T to do my library degree there. And then when I got out, my boyfriend at the time was here in Calgary. So I said, oh, well, I'll apply to jobs in Calgary. So the first job I got actually was not a subject librarian. It was cataloging down at St. Mary's University College. Yeah, way down in the south there. So I did that for a year. And then when the year was almost up, I was doing service work for the Foothills Library Association, which is a local, hyper-local Calgary-only library association. And the person I was working with, one of them, said, oh, you know, I'm right now the biology and physics librarian, but I've been seconded to a different position, and an opening will be coming up. So I applied for that, and then ended up being biology physics for 2 years, I can't quite remember, during which time my office mate, who was the chemistry librarian, got another job. And so I applied for her job. And then so then I became chemistry, computer science, and math, I think, librarian. And then from there, like throughout the years, like different subjects kind of got added, subtracted, whatever. So here I am now.
Very cool.
Long story. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Was there one subject matter besides when you started in biology and physics, were you pulled at all to computer science? Were you interested in it? What was your story, you know, really hopping on that opportunity to, you know, apply for that role that your desk mate had?
Well, specifically that role was, it was a permanent position. Yeah. So I was like, I need to work, right? So I needed a job. Yeah. And I mean, it helped a lot that she was my office mate. So I would attend her sessions on chemistry and other library science, like other library subjects. And so I kind of learned by watching her. So yeah, that really helps as well.
So as the subject librarian, if I'm a computer science student, I'm not sure what classes they may take that require research. But if I'm taking a class and I need to research something, how do I go about contacting you? How do I go about accessing these services that the U of C provides?
You can always contact us through chat. So on our homepage, there's a little chat bubble. You can go in there and say, hey, what's the contact information for the librarian? There's an Ask Us tab on the webpage as well. You can just email me directly, jelee@ucalgary.ca. I do think a lot of students don't realize that they have a librarian for their course or for their subject area. I don't know if there's a really good way besides like letting professors know that we're available. And often we'll do that is at the beginning of the semester or whatever, say, okay, Professor so-and-so, you're teaching this course. Let us know if you want us to come into your class. And it really just depends on the professor. If they want you in, if they don't have a paper for their course, they might say, no, that's okay. This is like totally a methods course and we're good. Actually, although I'm thinking right now, have you heard about O'Reilly Books?
I've heard that name. What about you, Kelsey?
Sounds familiar, but yeah, not exactly sure.
Because these are just really useful. This is kind of lateral thinking here, but O'Reilly, I think it's called O'Reilly Safari. They have really good tech books, ebooks. So if you need to know how to program something, if you want to learn a programming language, that is a really good resource. Even staff will use it because we've got a lot of obviously staff members who work with computers and programming and stuff, and it's a good resource.
So you mentioned that you're not, you know, extremely techy, which is completely fine. You know, I'm not from like a coding background either, but have you picked up anything on the job that you would say is, you know, related to coding and related topics?
Picked up, I'm trying to pick up. So there's this thing called carpentries. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but there's a data carpentry, a library carpentry, and a software carpentry, I guess, group. And they're trying to raise, grow up, not quite programmers, but people to help them code. So I've been trying to learn some of the library carpentries things. I've done kind of a train the trainer session, and I'm trying to participate more in library carpentries to teach coding. And so I've volunteered to do one on Python sometime in, I think, March. And I've done a couple of sessions on Unix, which is very helpful, but my work doesn't necessarily always use it. But I can see how being able to get in more into the guts of, not quite the operating system, but the guts of, let's say, the computer, can be really useful. But other than that, I've picked up a lot of Excel because we look at spreadsheets for collections a lot. And then I'm trying to think if there's anything else within the library. Our visualization person is actually, he's got a PhD in computer science, and he's really good with Tableau and what else? And any coding. And then I actually have, through him, learned a little bit of LaTeX or about LaTeX or LaTeX, that formatting thing. But I usually just teach the overleaf part of the LaTeX session that we both do together, which is the interface. Yeah. Do you guys use an overleaf or LaTeX at all?
I've heard about LaTeX. My girlfriend's in computer science at the University of Alberta, and she tells me all the time that people are coding their resumes in LaTeX. And I'm like, I can barely even formulate my resume in Word, let alone code my resume.
Okay. I'm going to go into librarian mode again and say that Overleaf is actually pretty good for that, because you can download, but within Overleaf, once you have an account, you can actually get templates for resumes and things like that. And the good thing about Overleaf is on one side, you see the LaTeX, and then on the other side, you see how it's translated. I can't remember the word right now, but you see the PDF version of it. And so you can do some stuff on the left and see how it affects the PDF. And so it's very incremental, quite friendly to use, and it's online and totally free. So
that's super cool to know about. And you mentioned that you run a session with the other associate librarian. When can students attend these sessions? Are they going on right now through, COVID times, or?
Yeah, we're definitely having, in general, lots of online sessions. The LaTeX one specifically is usually during block week. So we'll do a whole bunch. The LabNext coordinator kind of coordinates a whole bunch during that block week. And it's kind of nice to have them all together, because then students will kind of take a few in a row, and they're, open to anyone.
Neat. I had a question. So what are kind of some projects or research projects that you've helped students with in the past? Maybe you have a specific story that you'd like to share, or something to give students a deeper understanding of what specifically you would help them with.
Not specific stories. Again, very general. So if they have research papers to write for their courses, usually I'll ask them, okay, what's your topic? And we'll set up an appointment. And if we do it over Zoom, I can screen share and things like that. But we'll just kind of do some sample searches. I'll show them the major databases. Once we've kind of looked at some sample searches, I can show them how to focus the topic, because usually if you just type in two or three terms, you get thousands of results. So based on those results, how can you narrow it down a little bit more to something that you can work with? And then again, depending on what their assignment is, I can recommend other resources as well, including, I don't know if you guys know about Mendeley, Zotero, does that sound familiar? Okay. Again, another useful tool, because they will keep track of your references for you, put them all in one place, and then often integrate with things like Overleaf, Word, and then when you're writing, you can access the database and then pull references in to Word. And then at the very end, with a few clicks of a button, you can actually create your bibliography. Kelsey, have you used them before?
Yeah, I have Mendeley on my laptop and I used it. I'm taking the biomedical engineering minor, so we've had to do a few research papers.
Hey, What the Tech podcast listeners, I just want to jump in here and say that this was when Jennifer was going to give us a demonstration of the program she was just talking about. I just thought I'd cut out this part of the podcast because you can't see what she's doing, but we will include a link to the guide in the description of this podcast.
I think a lot of students, again, they don't encounter this until later. And then they think, oh man, I wish I had known this like at the beginning. And
yeah, no, you mentioned that students might say, dang, I wish I knew that. That's definitely something that I'm saying, dang, I wish I knew that for some of my earlier classes where I had to write papers. So that's an incredible, you know, resource for students to know. And Kelsey, do you want to jump in here?
Sure. How has your job, your role changed because of COVID? I know normally people can come into the library and meet you in person. So what sorts of things have been different or changed?
Yeah, lots of Zoom, like teaching and meetings and things like that. With respect to kind of library information and library sessions, also learning how to use recording equipment to make videos and screencasting, and yeah, it's been really interesting, but all of that stuff is so time consuming. It seems like it should be really easy to just like whip off a video where I'm showing people like where to click, what to do, but there's a lot of that like thinking about what to present, how to present it, and then getting around the tech, or not getting around the tech, but working with the tech and using it to the best of my abilities. So I never thought I would ever create a pop filter out of nylons and an old like cover of a yogurt container, but I've got one now. And I use my music stand to kind of like elevate everything. And oh, it's just, yeah, and that's not even the tech part, I guess. But yeah, it's been really interesting that way. And I mean, I enjoy making the videos, but they take way longer than I would have thought. Yeah. What else? Yeah, it's just being in this little room of an office and having three screens in front of me and doing everything online. Yeah. How about for you guys? Like, how are you doing?
It's been a bit of an adjustment for sure. I know, last winter when we started kind of Zoom classes, it was quite a bit of a shock. Like there was a bit of a learning curve, a lot to learn, but kind of gotten the swing of things now. Still isn't ideal, but just kind of do what you can, I guess, every day, make it work.
Yeah, for me personally, it's been a bit of a, you know, a hurdle to get over. I was on a internship last semester, as opposed to doing classes. So this is my first real semester of Zoom school since winter 2020. Oh. So I haven't done it since everything was brand new. So I kind of feel like I'm a little behind everyone else because, you know, I haven't gotten that good adjustment in yet. But it's been all right, you know, 2 weeks in, and, you know, I think I've managed my time properly, and I'm figuring out what I need to prioritize, what I don't need to prioritize, that kind of thing. And I think those priorities do change now that I'm just at home, and the profs know that you're just at home and have changed the lectures to reflect that, right? So yeah, it's been different, a little tricky, but I'm surviving.
Yeah. Do you guys have any asynchronous classes where like it's all just pre-recorded videos? Yeah. How are those, out of curiosity?
I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with them because one of my asynchronous classes was supposed to be an 8 a.m. So I'm really happy that I don't have to get up at 8 a.m. But it's also hard because you don't have the ability to ask questions in real time, or there aren't other students asking questions that maybe you hadn't even thought of. So it's just very different. It's kind of lonely too.
Yeah. I'd probably say like the exact same as Kelsey. I have one class that is strictly asynchronous this semester, and then another couple where the lectures are pre-recorded, and then I still have to go into the defined lecture period to do in-class activities. So it's very overwhelming, I'd say, to have to watch a lecture video and then go in and do an activity, because that doubles the amount of time that I would need to spend on that one lecture, right? And if a lecture happened 3 times a week, that's two times the amount of class that happened 3 times a week, which is quite a significant amount. But I do agree with Kelsey, like being able to watch those videos whenever I want is super nice. And then the one class that I have that is completely asynchronous is actually Computer Technologies and Music, which is a class about block coding different synthesizers in a program called Max. So that it has been pretty cool so far, and it is asynchronous, which is helpful just because I think I work a lot better with like a tech class like that, where I can pause the video, play the video, and, you know, really absorb those concepts and figure out how to use them. Because I feel like in class, it's a lot harder to pick up code if someone's kind of just like throwing it all out at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge wall of text. Yeah. So did you know that if we're ever, hopefully we'll be back in person, the library has recording studio, little recording rooms. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah. I think I've seen one of them, but I've honestly just haven't had the chance to get in there, but I've seen it's like in the back of the third floor. I know that much. But it always looks really cool. And I know there's a piano as well as other computers with digital audio workstations in the area closer to Lab Next. So I know there's a ton of different cool technologies out there. It's just, you know, finding the time to use them, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
I just wanted to jump back for a second. You mentioned librarian videos. So this is obviously a new thing for you to do and produce for students. Do you mind running us through behind the scenes what it takes to, you know, record one of these videos for students, or, you know, how the behind the scenes of going about researching a question for a student or a topic?
Yeah, so most of these have been for specific courses. So I will think about what students will need for the course or for the assignment, and then think about how to present it linearly, like in a clear fashion. And usually I use PowerPoint to kind of organize my thoughts. So I have limited access to kind of video making software. And right now I found that PowerPoint has pretty good features. So I can go slide by slide and record audio for each slide. I can add animations. And so that helps me kind of portion off different parts of the video. And then once I've kind of done all of the each slide, I can actually record the whole thing and then turn that into a video. And then within each kind of slide, I can also flip out and do a screen capture. So then I can record like where my mouse is moving and stuff like that, and then insert that back into the PowerPoint. So that's what I've been trying to use so far. Most students, I think, would like benefit from, let's say, how to find a known item. So if you're like reading an article or you've got some lecture notes or even your syllabus and it's referring to something that like exists, right? The known item, how to search for that using the library catalog. So that's often in the guides that I create. What else do I do? I'll do the like subject specific. So for chemistry, I've done a video on the CRC handbook, chemistry and physics, as well as kind of the difference between two major chemistry databases, SciFinder and ReAccess, and why you would use each one. Those two databases really have already good videos on how to use them. So I've kind of like backed away from that because there's no way I can make them look as good as the manufacturer, as a database publishers do. And so that's how I've been doing them. Other colleagues, if they've got access to that kind of that main one, the really big Camtasia, that's really kind of a really good one. I've heard around campus OBS Studio works really well. That's free. I think the kind of access, whatever access I have, I'll try and like cobble something together based on the tools that I have. the library itself actually has three new general videos that aren't necessarily computer science related, but are really well done. So again, maybe I'll send you the link. That they're on YouTube as well.
You mentioned that the OBS studio is free, and that mm-hmm. there's other librarians on campus or other staff members or students using Camtasia. If I was a student and I have a project coming up where I need to present and record a video for that, how do I go about finding that software from UC?
That's I think that's more of an IT question, but I do know that somewhere on the IT site or in your login for Office, you can get access to the whole Office suite. So all students have some free access to the Office suite. I don't know how to get to it offhand, but I know it's possible. And you can download Word and Windows stuff, and or rather Office stuff, and use any of that. But yeah, it's somewhere on the IT site or within your login. So yeah, sorry, like some of these answers are so generic and not like particularly computer science-y, but a lot of this stuff is applicable to computer science students.
Hey, yeah, no, for sure. I just have one more follow-up question, and I know Kelsey has a few other things that she had planned to ask. Leanne mentioned that she asks you questions all the time and you jump back to her with the response and she's blown away by, you know, how quickly or, you know, how in depth you found that answer. Do you mind running us by how you would get a question answered like that?
Hey, I just want to jump back in here and mention that Leanne is the manager for Kelsey and I.
It depends on the question for sure. Oh gosh, how do I do what I do? Is what
yes,
your
how
question,
do you do what you
right?
do?
And that's
give
really...
us some behind the scenes. How do you do what you do?
That is so tough to answer. Well, the first time we met, I was not able to answer her question. I can't remember what it was, but. We just did like some searching together. We talked about it. We evaluated the results that we got. And I think just like going back and forth and kind of discussing her research topic, it was fine that we couldn't find anything because that kind of confirmed that it was a good like area for her to go into. So it wasn't like there was like so much that it had all already been done. If it's an instructor and they have a question about like how to get stuff into their reading list for D2L, I mean, there's a lot of support within the library. So I don't know. I know, I guess from having worked here for so long, who might be the expert or who might know the answer to a question. And they're not totally off the wall questions. Their questions coming from the university context. So I have that as a wrapper around the question. Yeah, they used to, in library school, I'm pretty sure they still do this, but they used to teach like how to do a reference interview. So maybe that's the way to frame this. So you talk with the person to learn more about what they want, because sometimes what they ask is not always what they're actually looking for. And that's okay because they don't know what they don't know. So they ask about what they know. And so you kind of just ask them open-ended questions. Like, why are you like doing this project? Like, what is it for? Why do you need it? And then as they start talking, then little pieces of information start kind of falling in place as to, okay, they might need to know this, they might need to know this, they probably need to know this. And then if it's by email, then I can kind of structure all that information. But even, you know, in person to person, I can say, okay, yes, 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 I should cover these things. And then, I don't know, go, I guess. That's a good question.
Very insightful.
I haven't really thought about
Thank
that.
Thank you. Kelsey, do you want to jump in there?
Sure. This is kind of going back way to right at the beginning when you were explaining kind of what your job is. And you mentioned that you were assisting with a research project. Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, now which one was that? Maybe like when I was telling you about my day?
Or... Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so it's a scoping review that I'm working on with three other librarians. So the, we'll call her the principal investigator. She's kind of the one who had the idea to do this. She wants to look at language use in libraries in general, but specifically the fact that a lot of the literature that's been published in this area doesn't have specific examples, verbal examples. So it's very meta as opposed to specific. An example of this would be when you are interacting with a student, don't ask ambiguous questions or something like that. Okay, so that's very meta. What the literature doesn't report is are things like, well, an example of an ambiguous question might be, you didn't use the catalog, did you? So someone could say yes to answer that question, but did they mean yes, I did use the catalog, or yes, I didn't use the catalog? So we're trying to find in the literature as many examples as we can of that sort of thing, but based more around microaggressions, ageism. So some of them are kind of negative, but there are some examples in those areas. So to do that, we like did a really broad search of the library literature, put them all into one database called Covidence that the university has a license to, deduplicated all the results, and then looked through the rest to say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then of all the yeses, now we have to read through them and actually find the examples and then write a paper on them, pretty much report our findings. Yeah. So it's very library specific. But yeah, scoping reviews, systematic reviews, those are really common in health sciences. They do a lot of those where they ask the literature a question. Usually they have like an outline called PICO, which is like population intervention, something, I can't remember the C, of course, and then outcomes. And then they look in the medical literature to find all the articles that answer that question. And then sometimes they'll do some statistics about it and then report, okay, yes, this is the best dose of vaccine for children between the ages of 6 and 12 based on these 30 articles that we found.
Oh, that's very interesting. Have you ever done this kind of research before, or is this something new to you?
For me, it's new because I'm relatively a new health sciences person, librarian. This is the Bachelor of Health Sciences. I'm doing interim until the person who's on mat leave right now comes back. So I've done one, and that was about 2 years ago, that focused on, gosh, it's been so long. It was health and policy and a certain type of delivery of healthcare. And they wanted to know what literature was published on it in Canada specifically. So they're just starting to write about that. The person I was working with has emailed me back a few questions about some of the stuff that I did for her way back when.
Well, that's really neat. Well, thank you for sharing.
No problem.
Chris, did you have any last questions? Or
I have exhausted all my questions. What about you, Kelsey?
No, so I guess we can kind of wrap it up. Jennifer, is there any last, you know, resources or things you want to share with students before we kind of finish?
I would say definitely contact your librarian, try and find them. So I will give you that web page, consult with a librarian page. I would have to preface with this with a lot of these resources are accessible only to UCalgary students and staff and faculty because of our licensing agreements with the publishers and other providers. So yeah, definitely get in touch with your librarian if you have questions. Chat, of course, is always available, or not always, but we've got longer hours than office hours with chat. It's open weekends as well and evenings. I would say, yeah, contact us, because sometimes the question is, it can be specific enough that it's maybe a little more efficient to just ask the subject librarian as opposed to kind of floundering around on the webpage, because we do have a lot of good resources on the webpage, but the librarian can kind of help you focus and say, okay, just look at this stuff for now. If you need other help, then I can direct you somewhere else.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for your time. We really appreciated you taking the time out of your day for letting us know, you know, what the tech is going on here.